Thanks for joining us this evening. My name is Ibrahim Sani and you're watching Notepad. Very recently, we've heard of news on the Securities Commission of Malaysia banning the operations of Binance. And this comes surprisingly as other countries around the globe is also taking action or sanctioning Binance from continuing its operations in this various jurisdiction. The CEO, Zhao Changpeng, has also been reprimanded or singled out by SC. Zhao is a Canadian Chinese. It is reported that he lives in Singapore, but the sanction comes not just on Binance Finance Limited, but on Zhao himself. The SEC's action follows a global crackdown on Binance in other jurisdictions, including that of the UK, Japan, Hong Kong, Italy. And the sanction against Binance is actually quite hard, largely because the sanctions are now on its website, on its Telegram app, on all of its mechanisms on reaching out to consumers. In Malaysia, there are a lot of customers from Binance, and we are here trying to find out how customers in Malaysia, how Binance customers in Malaysia can navigate through these very trying times. Joining us for this evening is Han Liu, the co-founder and director of ringgitplus.com. Han, thanks for taking the time to speak with us. Now, before we jump into the whole opaque world of cryptocurrency and what it is and all that, we have to take a step back and try to understand a little bit better about the history of asset classes. You know, all the way from the stocks of the 1700s to derivatives in the 70s, and now this new asset class, so to speak. So let's talk about, you know, investments in various asset classes all the way until cryptocurrency, Han.
No, sure thing, Ibrahim. Thanks for having me on. I think the first thing to mention is that with any new asset class, and we were talking about cryptocurrency specifically just now, there are growing pains. There's time to maturity, both on the investor side, the asset itself, as well as how people view the economics and speculation around each asset class. So you're speaking about history. I mean, there are many asset classes available, obviously, to invest in. The most, I guess, historical long-dated one is like gold, right? Gold is probably one of the oldest investment asset classes, thousands of years. Gold has had some sort of value for a number of investors and people, right? But then more recently, new asset classes have come to the fore, right, in the last kind of 400 years or so. So the first stock traded in 1602, I think, was the Dutch East India Company. We in Malaysia, I guess, quite familiar with that company, you know, because we were once ruled by the Dutch. First bond issued by a government, Bank of England, 1693, to finance the war with France and stuff like that. So as with any new asset class, there's always growing pains, right? What do I mean by that, right? I mean, even in the early stages of stock investing on an exchange, like I said, in the 1700s, there were things like speculation. There were things like scammers trying to scam people to say that, hey, I've got this new great company, right? Back then. Today, these days, we are much more familiar with these kind of scams, right? But back then, can you imagine a new asset class? You can buy stocks in a company, and someone goes and says, I got this great going company, but you know nothing about it. So these kind of scams have been happening, you know, as with any new asset class. So where does that leave us with more recent times, right? In more recent times, we've seen, you know, the rise of structured derivatives as recently as the 1980s and the 90s, culminating in the financial crisis in 07. And obviously, the most kind of exciting new asset class for investors, cryptocurrency, over the last 12 years, since 2009.
All right, let's look at one of the reasons why one would opt on investing in cryptocurrency in this asset class. Because I'm still not done investing in derivatives, in ETFs. What's wrong with investing in other asset classes? Why must we flock into cryptocurrency right now?
Sure. I think the basic two tenets of investing are the following, right? One, why are there new asset classes created all the time? I think it's because there may be economic value being created somewhere, right, in some space of society. So, you know, as investors, you want to deploy capital where there's economic value. So that's the first tenet. And as a financial planner, I always tell everyone, including you, Ibrahim, like, invest in what you know and understand. So if it takes you a bit of time to understand an asset class, if it's truly a legitimate asset class, it can wait for you to understand it. So don't panic about that. But more specifically on why is cryptocurrency even an asset class? A lot of people don't understand this, right? Why is it even considered an asset class? I think you've got to look at whether or not it has any economic value or not as an entity in modern economics, right? And I think to do that, you have to understand what a cryptocurrency is and does first, right? So a cryptocurrency is basically a digital form of payment, right, of which balances of each of us that we hold and transactions between us are not recorded by a specific person or institution that is trusted by a central government. So the cryptocurrency itself is not issued by any central government, and the balances are not verified by a specific institution like a bank, like CIMB, Maybank, Public Bank, right? So if we have money in CIMB, Maybank, Public Bank, they will tell us how much balance we have. They can record transactions between you and me. So Han sends Ibrahim 10 ringgit. CIMB records that, and Ben Nagara trusts them to do it, right? There's a trusted counterparty. But with cryptocurrencies, right, how much I own of a coin and maybe how much you own of a coin is recorded digitally on a sort of internet cloud of computers. And imagine millions and millions of computers, right, verifying that, in fact, Han owns 5 coins, for example, and Ibrahim owns 10, right? Millions of computers have verified the word is validated this, right? And therefore, that makes it quite a trusted source of making sure that Han, in fact, owns something and Ibrahim, in fact, owns something, 5 and 10. And because it's recorded digitally, there's a way for us to transfer that value, right, that 5 and 10. So let's say I'll give you all my money, my 5 coins, I'll transact it digitally to you. Yet again, these millions of computers on a cloud network powered by the internet will store the fact that Han, in fact, transferred Ibrahim 5 coins, and now you have 15, and this can be verified by millions of people. So that has value, right? And you can immediately think of two immediate value points, right? One, the fact that millions of people can prove that I own something, and it's hard to hack a million computers all at the same time, right? It's hard to hack, so it's very cyber safe in that way. It's to be fair, it's hard to hack a bank too, but at the end of the day, it's just one institution. Can you imagine millions of computers storing the same information? You would have to hack millions of computers to be able to change the fact that I own 5 coins. Now, so that's one value, store of value, just like gold, right? And that's why cryptocurrency today is seen as a store of value, because it's just super immutable, super unhackable is the word to use, I guess. I shouldn't use that word too much, but essentially it's because it's stored on so many people's computers, the information that I own 5 and you own 10, it's a good store of value, just like gold. So that's one. And second, because of my ability to transmit it to you electronically, right? That means you can be sitting in Timbuktu, I can be sitting in Malaysia on the beach, I can transfer you money, it reaches you in less than 10 minutes. And that has value. You can immediately see what the economic value of that activity is, right? Remittance services have value. You know, people like Western Union, TransferWise, they churn trillions of US dollars worth of currency every year around the globe, and they take a small fee, but that has value. So that's the two utility values that, among many, that cryptocurrencies are starting to have, right? And because of that, there are then speculators, right? So there's the third portion, which is there is some speculative value of a new asset class, which drives up and prices up and down. So in short, that's what cryptocurrencies are all about. And that's why it's being considered as an asset class for the modern age.
Yeah, that's the thing, right? Because in Malaysia, we are a heavily regulated market when it comes to financial instruments. SE, of course, is very supportive of not just investors in trying to find value from the financial markets, but SE is also rather supportive of companies trying to roll out products onto the capital markets. But we want to understand why SE is a little bit more hesitant when it comes to Binance. How would investors enter this space into crypto with the auspices or with the protection, so to speak, of the SE on this matter?
No, I think that's a very good point. First statement is like, the SC, the Securities Commission of Malaysia, is a highly regarded institution protecting investors for a very long time, right? And I think one part of it is that they are very protective, but they're also very innovative, right? So when they realize that, hey, there's a lot of investor demand for this new asset class over the last few years, i.e. cryptocurrency, they started looking into it and thinking, how can I craft regulations which allow Malaysians to, get access in some shape, way or form into this asset class, but do it safely. So to that end, they've created all kinds of new regulations around cryptocurrency trading. It's perfectly legal to do so. There are just obviously some rules that you should try to follow while thinking about investing. For example, use regulated cryptocurrency exchanges to trade, right, to buy and sell. That's a classic kind of recommendation from the SC, which is a good one, right? If use a regulated cryptocurrency or digital asset exchange, they call it, in Malaysia, because we regulate them. For example, they say, and we'll look after your investments from things like fraud, process failures, etc.
Right, Han. Let's talk about some of the approved regulatory exchanges or regulated exchanges in Malaysia. We know there's four. Let's go through them.
Sure. I think, over the last, 2 years, since the regulations were crafted around cryptocurrency exchanges, you being able to buy and sell on them, four have been approved. The most recent one, I think a couple of weeks ago, there's Luno, there's Tokenize, there's Synergy, and now MX Exchange. For me, think of it, for an investor, think of it like investing on Bursa, right? You can directly open an account with Bursa, buy and sell cryptocurrencies, just like you would buy and sell stocks on your CDS account on Bursa. Think of it like that. And you will only do it, the SC will recommend you only do it on these four regulated exchanges, because they are monitored, they are regulated, they do reporting to the SC to make sure there's no kind of hanky-panky going behind the scenes, there's no process failures that could happen, they manage cybersecurity risks, your funds, if in fact you have funds in there, they're safe, etc. And that's why it's important to do that.
Right. Which brings on to the core subject for this evening. The Securities Commission of Malaysia announced enforcement actions against Binance for illegally operating a digital asset exchange, or DAX, and under Section 7(1) and 34(1) of the Capital Markets and Services Act, all DAX operators must be registered as Recognized Market Operators, or RMO, by the SC. Now, one would argue, why hasn't Binance applied to operate asset exchanges? They apparently have not even applied to be licensed under the Futures Exchange. Now, I know you're not representing Binance or by any means, but maybe, what would be some of the speculation that you have right now?
I don't work for Binance. I have no affiliation to Binance, so I can only speculate. But my guess is Binance, sorry, just for everyone's benefit, is the largest digital exchange in the world. They transact, 30 to 50 to 80 billion US dollars worth of digital assets a day. So by and large, one of the largest, in fact, the largest cryptocurrency exchange globally. Now, my guess is, and my best guess is, they haven't seen Malaysia as a crucial cog to their business yet, but they are clearly starting to. And because they had not seen Malaysia as a crucial part of their business in the kind of global space, had not, I don't want to use the word bothered, it was just not in the priority for them to set up an office here, get registered, get approved to then operate. And as you know, in the internet world, if you're a savvy investor, perhaps maybe slightly uneducated, but savvy to find out more, you will find Binance, you will hear about it, you will learn more, and you can actually just sign up for it without them having been approved here, right? But whether you should be using them, completely different issue.
Yeah, but why the flagrant disregard of rules? It's not just in Malaysia. Binance have disregarded rules across markets. From the Italian CEC, the Hong Kong SFC, the Thailand SEC, and so on, including that of the Malaysia's SC. Yeah, what's going on there?
Yeah, absolutely. I think if you can kind of sort of guess which country is important to Binance down the list, right? So, for example, they have a license to operate in the US through their subsidiary and through their kind of subdomain, Binance.us. They have a license to operate in Singapore through the Singaporean subsidiary. And if you are a Singaporean sitting in Singapore trying to access Binance, you get the Singaporean version, which is approved of Binance. So clearly, you can see where their priorities are in terms of financial markets. And I suspect they'll start going down the list and start coming back to the real world in terms of realizing that if you want to operate a business, even though you're a global business, if you want to operate business in various jurisdictions, you need to get permission from the regulators in those jurisdictions. And my sense is it's just a matter of time before they just knock off the list where they can and where they're allowed to, one by one.
So if we're running Binance right now, what would be some of the options that are left for that company? It seems like they are trying to grow their operations here. And of course, you know, I'm outing myself here. I've been reached out by some folks that is claiming that they're representing Binance and seeing if I'm interested to work there. So they seem to be growing here. So it doesn't seem like they are shying away from this market, even when they are being sanctioned. So yeah, what's going on there?
Yeah, the eagle-eyed among us have spotted shortly after the SEC announcement, Binance, you know, issued out a few job descriptions out in the market for, you know, a Malaysia team, including the leader in Malaysia, team members in Malaysia, regulatory relationship kind of people in Malaysia, people to engage with regulators, right? And I think this is a good move, right? Like if you've been told, hey, you're operating illegally, there are two main options. One, you stop operating, or two, you figure out how to regulate yourself, essentially get regulated yourself to then continue operating. And I'm quite pleased to see that, because clearly Malaysia is has a thriving cryptocurrency interest market. That's kind of a good signal for me that we're kind of important enough to a global player, you know, to then apply for approval here, or at least take the first steps towards applying for approval here. As to whether you should join them, I'll leave it to you. But you know, for me, if you ask me, regulatory relations becomes one of the most important things for anyone trying to operate a capital markets business, including a cryptocurrency exchange.
Okay, Han, we'll go for a short break. When we come back, we'll discuss what are the options left for Malaysian customers of Binance. That's coming up after this break. Okay, thanks for staying on with us. We have here the co-founder and director of RinggitPlus.com, Han Liu. Han, let's talk about some of the options left for consumers in Malaysia. But before we do that, let's talk about the customer size of Binance in Malaysia. How big do you think the customer base of Binance customers are in this country?
Yeah, no, for sure. I think if we take the local cryptocurrency exchanges as a proxy, right, of how many people could be involved in cryptocurrency or digital asset investment, it could be close to a million people. Based on the numbers across all cryptocurrency exchanges here in Malaysia, that a million Malaysians could be involved or could be invested in some form of cryptocurrency or another. So I would not be surprised that a large number of them have also started to explore, you know, other exchanges that might give them more liquidity, more choices, more types of financial products other than just buying and selling. So it's not a surprise that, you know, the SEC will have to come down and say, hey, look, like, you're clearly servicing a large number of Malaysians and you're doing it illegally, so we're going to have to do something, and rightly so, right? And so, I mean, just a bit of background, the notice issued was last week, early last week, saying that, you know, Binance, the company, as well as the CEO himself, CZ, who was named in the order to shut down its operations, or at least stop offering its services to Malaysians in 14 business days. That's the 16th of August, if you count our Muharram as a public holiday, which we all do. So by the 16th of August, you know, Binance has been ordered to stop offering its services to Malaysians. This can mean a number of things, right? It can mean the SEC ordering Binance to stop allowing Malaysian IPs to access Binance.com and any of its associated websites and applications on mobile, as well as any other kind of marketing operations here in Malaysia, either through chat groups or social media. So that's kind of what might happen. Has been told by the SE to Binance to happen by the 16th. And for investors, the SE is recommending that if you have funds in Binance, to remove them, to get them out of Binance somehow, and we can talk about the various options and the other risks shortly as well.
Yeah, which nicely moves into the options of Binance customers in Malaysia. And let's troubleshoot one by one. Now, as a certified CFA holder, one that has actually passed all three papers, unlike me, for instance, and of course, a CFP to boot, a chartered financial planner, or certified financial planner, what would be some of the options for customers of Binance in Malaysia? Do you think that customers should take their money out of Binance?
Yeah, good point. I mean, there are many options, right? One is, and the most controversial one is to, I guess, keep your money in Binance and hope nothing goes wrong. I'd say that's a very risky option. And not just because there may be local enforcement action taken on Binance, i.e., you know, blocks from the ISP to the websites and apps, blocks on the MCMC site for your OTPs for a Malaysian phone number. So those things might happen. I mean, most people know that, and they might have some ideas of how to get around that. But what you might not be able to get around is Binance themselves deciding that they might want to comply with the SC order, right? And say, hey, look, we want to operate legally, properly in Malaysia, regulated. But to do that, we probably have to stop for a while and get ourselves regulated. And if that does happen, then your funds may be not at risk, but the access to your funds may be at risk for a period of time while they get themselves regulated. So that might happen, right? So I'd say if you were being a rational, kind of logical investor, you think, okay, look, like they might get legalized in Malaysia, but for now, it's best that I move my coins over or my assets over to either my own wallet that I own and I can control myself, i.e. not on the exchange, or move it over to a local exchange and only on its native blockchain. So there's a bit of technicality there, but just to keep it safe, move it to a local exchange using the native blockchain. So Bitcoin to Bitcoin, Ethereum to ERC, Litecoin to Litecoin, etc., etc. So these are a few options. One, keep it in there at your own risk. Two, move it to your own wallet, whether it's hardware or software. Or three, move your coins to a local exchange that accepts the coins, those coins that are accepted.
What about access to funds? Would Binance customers in Malaysia still have access to their funds in Binance even when the SE has sanctioned a move to block all access to their website, to their Telegram app and so on? Do customers still have money if they leave it in Binance?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. I think the message here is simple, right? Binance is a global, the largest global cryptocurrency exchange, and it's actually more than just an exchange now. It has all kinds of financial services. So they're unlikely to just throw away your coins. They're unlikely to just run away with your funds. So your funds themselves should be safe. However, given the current order from the Malaysian SE to Binance and how Binance themselves might react to them, and keep in mind, Binance knows who are Malaysians who use Binance, right? They know who are the Malaysians in their customer base. They might decide to follow the order. So your funds are safe, but the access to your funds might not be. So the best analogy I think about it is, imagine if bank branches are closed and suddenly online banking goes down for a while. Your funds should be fine. Should be safe in the banking system, right? But your access to those funds might be severely limited at some point in time after the 16th. So that's a bit of risk there.
All right. You know, some of us are very errant. We want to bypass rules even when it's clearly illegal to do so. VPN, for instance. Yeah, customers might want to try to use VPN and access Binance. Do you think they can? In fact, I think the more important question here is, do you think they should do that?
As in both good questions. I think I don't know when it's going to happen after the 16th or whether it's on the 16th of August itself. But at some point, I do predict that Binance.com and the apps will no longer be accessible by Malaysian IPs, either because the SC requests the MCMC to take some action there, or, and this is an important point, or Binance themselves decides to say, hey, look, I know who the Malaysians are. I don't want to fall foul of the SC's rulings because I do want to get regulated here because, look, I'm hiring people. And they themselves might stop your access. So there's a risk there for those clever VPN users that on the ISP side, i.e. the internet side, you should be fine. But what if Binance themselves decides to comply, which I see there's a slight risk for them too, given that they're actually looking to hire people here to get regulated. It might not be the 16th, it might not be the day after, it might not be the week after, but certainly at some point, if that's their intention, they will certainly comply. So even if you had a VPN, keep in mind, Binance knows you've done your KYC with Binance. They know who you are in terms of whether you're Malaysian or not. For me, that's a crucial risk. So if you ask me, you're doing it at your own risk. And it's not just the risk on the Malaysia side, but Binance itself.
Okay, Ringgit Plus has the Ringgit Plus Academy. There's also other resources online. How would you advise investors on the way forward when it comes to educating themselves and making themselves a little bit more ready in investing in the world of cryptocurrency?
Yeah, I think cryptocurrency was kind of not a taboo subject up to as recently as a couple of years ago, but it's a legitimate asset class. It's been legitimized by the SC themselves saying, hey, look, we consider this a security. It's not a mode of payment. It's not legal tender, but it's a security. You can consider investing in it. So there's no reason why certified financial planners such as ourselves should not get really clued up on this asset class so we can better advise customers, and we can certainly push some parts of the advice, at least in terms of education, via our social media and online platforms such as Ringgit Plus. We have Academy, so if you're interested to learn more, we're happy to have that session with you, either through a one-on-one basis on Ringgit Plus Advance or on a group basis with Academy. Ask your HR team, we're happy to help.
All right, thanks, Han. That was Han Liu, the co-founder and director of ringgitplus.com. Thanks for taking the time to speak with us. Until then, thanks very much for watching and goodbye.